Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Essence Reliquary Sacks. We talked about it last week, Ethan. Have you played with this gem?
I haven't yet.
Wow.
I drafted it once because I, you know, in classic, like, we foretell the future on this podcast. The first draft that I did after we recorded last week, I had an Essence Reliquary in the pack.
And so you played.
And I was like, it could wheel, whatever, but I'm just going to take it, scooped it up. A deck for it was not open, so that was bad. And then I drafted a really good, I've drafted decks that would love an Essence Reliquary, but cannot find it. And
they've been nowhere to be found. Listen, I was on a quest all week. I was on a mission. I was like, just build it and they're going to come. And I kept building it and they kept not coming. I finally got it this weekend. I've done it twice now, and it is as fun as advertised. It's sick.
I forgot. I actually have played with it because I did a paper draft of my house on Friday, and I okay, so here's what happened. Pack one, pick one, Kappa Cannoneer, then pretty low power level packs taking, so I started taking red cards. Think I got like a charge bug pick three or whatever. But weirdly in paper to my right, my friend J-Maz is there, and I see him take the MDFs, the red MDFC pick three, the like 5-mana 2/2 gets back a spell.
Yeah, the monk.
And I'm like, well, maybe we'll see. Maybe we could both get into red. I don't know. No other reason to not take red cards. Take one, pick four, pick five. And I see him take a second monk, pick five. And I'm like, All right, let's just throw these picks away. So move into like a mostly mono black artifacts deck with a little bit of blue. For we had the Cannoneer, I got the white Wrath, the energy Wrath pack two, which was nice, and I got an Essence Reliquary, and I got to do picking up refurbished familiar and replaying it to like get their whole hand and then start drawing cards. Yeah, that was pretty sweet.
The other thing that's awesome that you can do is you can kind of make land drops. Like if you missed your land drop, yes, you can pick up a land, replay it, do the thing. The card is so flexible. Does so much. I misplayed with it so hard the first time I played with it because it can do so many things.
Right. Well, it's so hard because you don't often think about on your turn as a mode of a card, right? You think about like it can be instant speed or sorcery speed.
Or sorcery speed, yes.
Not it can be instant speed on my turn.
I was able to do, I had Ocelot Pride, the first striking lifelinker, and I was able to do first strike lifelink damage, pick it up, recast it so that I could get the trigger without it dying.
Like, there was so much that's ridiculous very cool stuff. Wow. Yeah, that's ridiculous. That's awesome. Yeah, very, very cool card. I would still like to cook with it a little bit more. Speaking of that draft, the Essence Reliquary draft, I told you about this, but I'll tell our listeners. I beat the triple Writhing Chrysalis deck in the finals with just mopey black. Black, the worst color in the format.
Lies.
Just got there.
It can't be done. I don't believe
can't
it.
Be done. My opponent did.
Receipts or it didn't happen.
He did play Emrakul on turn five.
I assume me. You lost that game.
That was the game against them I lost, yes.
Triple Chrysalis, no problem. Emrakul.
Emrakul, a little bit of an issue. Yeah, for sure. Well, because I'll tell you what's actually, we shouted this card out last week, but I'll tell you what's actually kind of a good answer to Chrysalis is Accursed Marauder, the black 2/1 make him sack a non-token. Like,
that card's just good. I've finally come around.
Yeah, Marauder is
it's either, really good. I used to think it was either great or garbage, and now I think it's either great or good. Like it's never really bad.
Yeah.
But that card is super sick. Honestly, I feel good about our Writhing Chrysalis takes last week. The card's very good. It's not the be-all end-all for the format.
Yeah, no, I'm with you for sure. So we're going to talk, you know, we got a lot of feedback. We sort of teased this a little bit last week about doing some chatting about pivoting in the format. I still am on non-zero train wrecks in the format, so I'm hoping that Ben can teach me the ways to sort of keep the draft on rails going forward. But a lot of folks let us know like, hey, that would actually be really helpful. So I think we are going to talk about pivoting this week, which is going to be awesome. So before we get into that, let's chat about the Patreon page. Patreon.com/LordsOfLimited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free. We are in the midst of Arena Open weekend. Usually Ben and I will draft before the episode, but we've got the PT next week. So we'll be doing all like draft log reviews then. So I think we'll just focus on pivoting this week, but cheering on all the folks in the Discord is what everybody who gives back via the Patreon gets access to. Cheering on those folks. Hope their drafts go well today and that we get a lot of people getting the 2K prize. And I'm sure we've got a qualifier weekend coming up too. So those high stakes events are really nice. There's actually an MTGO super qualifier next weekend that I'm going to try and play in. That's a top four, get an RCQ or get an RC invite. So we'll try and do that next weekend. So I'm sure we'll have some folks playing in there. So I think any of the high stakes events, especially when they're sealed, are nice to be in the Discord for, because you get some feedback from some like-minded limited individuals. And we have some great rewards as you move up the reward tier rankings over at the Patreon page. So check that out if you want to get back to the show. And I have some great news this week, Ben. We're going to be welcoming in a whole host of individuals this week, and a lot of them are named Ethan. So we want to welcome to the fray this week Gavin, Beauty Man, Solomon, Rossi, Crimson, Michael, Andrew, not one, not two, but three Ethans, an Etham, which I'm not sure was a typo or a joke, and a Smeethan. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Well, really, it's six, right? Beauty Man also, obviously, isn't Ethan.
Oh, there it is. We got six. We got six of them. Yeah. So I really can't believe it. It's great, like, targeted marketing that you did last week by pressuring Ethans to join the Patreon. I never thought of that as a great campaign, but it worked. So we really appreciate the support.
David's next week. It's your week, David.
Can I interest you in a JLK? What's the play?
Always.
Great. All right. Well, let's dive in. So this is actually from little old me. This came up this week on stream. We're in the midst of as we're going to find, and I think unless we're doing opening hands in MH3, what's the play? The board states are complicated, but I'm going to try and just synthesize down to what the important information is. Because basically this what's the play is about, what are we casting this turn? So it's turn six. In play, we're a little bit behind on board. We're at 14, our opponent's at 20, but we're kind of stable here. They've got a bunch of little creatures out. They've got a Hex Gold Slith, they've got a Mandibular Kite with a Germ attached to it, and they've got a Servo token in play. And on our side, we've got a lonely Rosecot Knight, the 4 and a white 3/4 Vigilance. I know Rosecot Knight, not great, but I actually had like 8 or 9 hits in this deck. So I was playing double Rosecot Knight to shore up.
I played a non-embarrassing amount of Rosecot Knights now that I've been on the Essence Reliquary life.
I mean, yeah, it's not like finds Reliquary and then you can pick it up with Reliquary to re-trigger it. It's not bad. It's not bad.
Still not good.
Still not good.
But it's not bad.
For our opponents last turn, they did nothing with their mana. So they have 4 untapped lands, 2 plains, 2 swamps, and they played a Glasswing Grace tapped as a land last turn, the black-white aura. So they have 4 untapped lands, and they played a 5th tapped land. Our turn, we have 4 lands in play and a Solar Transformer. We have 3 energy in the tank, so can tap that for any mana. We're a Jeskai deck. We have access to Jeskai mana with our mana base, but we don't have access right now to double blue, which is important for what's in our hand. Our hand is the following. 2 copies of Static Prison. That's the white enchantment that removes a creature, and then you pay energy every turn unless you sacrifice prison. Detective's Phoenix, the 2 and a red, 2/2 flying haste, bestow, single red, collect evidence 6. I was playing half the games of this thinking that it was escape 6 rather than collect evidence 6.
Well,
so I was like,
yeah,
overpaying
that, but
for
the
it.
Other thing that I realized when I played with it is I thought it was only bestow from the graveyard.
I
bestow
did too.
Straight from your hand by collecting 6, which is also just illegal when you do that because it's only a single red mana.
Detective's Phoenix is excellent. Okay, so 2 prisons, Detective's Phoenix, a Royal Cartographer, the 1 and a blue 1/3 that gets energy with landfall and you can draw cards with, a Hopeender Coadal, 2 and a blue 2/2 flash flyer, and it counters a spell on cast unless the caster of that spell pays 1, and another Rosecot Knight. So a hand full of action, 5 mana available. What's going through your head as you're looking at this? And like the board, like I said, like we're like kind of stable, right? Because we're only getting pecked by the Mandibular Kite right now, but we only have the Rosecot Knight out. So they kill that and then like the floodgates open again.
I mean, from the biggest picture thing I'm thinking looking at this board is, as you said, stable. The biggest thing that stands out to me about this is we have 6 cards in hand and our opponent has 2.
Right.
So my biggest overarching thought here is just don't accidentally die. I feel like if I can prevent anything terrible from happening, I'm in a pretty good spot to win. And certainly double Static Prison is going to help with that. It's going to catch lots of things. So mostly then my thought process shifts to, well, how can I impact the board the most or use my mana most efficiently? And there's not great permutations here, right? Because we've got five mana available and some threes and twos and ones and a five, but the threes and twos are both double blue. I guess your other option is, the most mana efficient option is you could play Royal Cartographer plus Detective's Phoenix. That kind of impacts the board the most, but I don't love playing Royal Cartographer on turns when I don't have a land drop. And also, ideally, you'd kind of like to bestow Detective's Phoenix. I guess you don't have to. But like, really, there's not a great game-breaking play you can make out of your hand here. So I'm going to kind of throw it over to you. What do you think?
So the one thing that I was stuck on here, and perhaps I was reading too much into this, you know, but I just think, like, if this is a piece of information that you're not picking up on as a player, I thought that this would be a good moment to highlight it, which is that our opponent had four mana, right? Plains, Plains, Swamp, Swamp. And what they chose to do was play their five mana aura as a land tapped. And that tells me that they have spells in hand. Spells that cost more than four mana, right?
Right, like, because they're already down on cards. So there's no way they would throw away that Glasswing Grace willingly with as choked as they are for actual cards.
Right. So because normally I think that this, I mean, you talked about not wanting to play Cartographer without a land drop, but I think normally this is just like, how do I use my mana the most efficiently? And there's nothing I really need to kill with Static Prison this turn. But so I would just play Cartographer and Phoenix, use all five of my mana, affect the board the most, etc. But I was just like, look, I'm pretty sure if this Hopeender Coadal is going to do something, it's this turn cycle, because they just chose to do this thing with, like, this tells me they have two spells in hand, and maybe those two spells cost more than four mana. So they might tap out next turn. And if they are, it's going to happen next turn. And that's when I'm going to get to nab them with the Coadal. And I would have loved to be able to play Cartographer, hold up Coadal, but I don't have double blue, as I said right now. So I opted to just sort of, in case this passing with mana open play blew up in my face, and they chose to move the kite onto a Hexgold Slith, and then I would have a real problem blocking it, and it was going to be big, I decided to cast Static Prison on the Mandibular Kite, and then pass with Hopeender Coadal up to counter whatever they were going to play.
It's interesting, yeah. I do like holding up Hopeender Coadal here, knowing that they've played the tap land. The only way you could get burned, potentially, is if it's a five drop and they top deck another land.
Yes.
But even then, it's worth the opportunity cost to go for it because I think clearly they're going to do something. The thing that you said that I didn't necessarily pick up on, I thought it was a little aggressive using Static Prison on the Mandibular Kite. But I think if you're going to do this, you have to account for the fact that they could just be putting Kite on Hexgold Slith.
Yeah. Because
you are, I guess you're not that far behind. You're okay with that, though, right? Because they spend their whole turn and four mana to deal four damage to you, and then you can just Static Prison the next turn?
Yeah, but then their Slith is... like. So then what am I Static Prisoning? Am I Static Prisoning the Slith, and they still have Kite? I mean, I guess I have two flyers in hand, so it's not that big of a deal. But, like, it just felt preventative in a way that, like... And I have another Static Prison as well.
Sure. So, I mean, the thing I don't love about it is the choke. It's taxing your energy for the rest of the game, because you really don't want Kite to come back as a 1/1, and you do have this Cartographer.
Yep.
It's close. I definitely think you hold up Hopeender Coadal. I don't know that I would have made the next leap and Static Prison to the Kite, but I kind of like it. I think there's pros and cons to that one.
So that's...
A
Johnny Fells the Pride was their play next turn, and they did not have a sixth land, and I got to just bink.
Nice.
So, like, I obviously, like, if this play doesn't counter a five drop, it's probably not as exciting and interesting to take a look at, but, like,
I still think it's the right thing to do, even if they play their sixth land and play a Johnny Fells. Like, you gave yourself a chance to hit Hopeender Coadal, and like I said, you're stable, and so you just want to try to account for what could go wrong, and holding up Hopeender Coadal is a, because you still get to have that efficient turn next turn.
Correct.
And if they play something that costs five and play their sixth land, you also have Static Prison to clean up the mess. Like, it's pretty low opportunity cost to hold up the Hopeender Coadal here.
Right.
And very high upside if you hit.
Very high upside, right, which is what it felt like.
Aiming for those ceilings, baby.
That's exactly right. So, like, just throwing out that kind of information of, like, oh, they played this thing as a land. What does that mean? They haven't used their mana otherwise. Like, it means they got something to do with all of that mana. And if you're not picking up on that stuff, I think you're leaving a little little bit of equity on the table. So there's our little what's the play. First, what's the play of the MH3 season? This podcast is sponsored by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms.
Squarespace is as easy to use as it is to mulligan a 7-land hand, as intuitive as curving out 2-3-4, and as nice a finished product as a fully foiled cube.
You too can start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools, so you show up more often to more people and grow the way you want.
Measure your end-to-end online performance with powerful website and seller analytics. Get insights on top traffic sources, understand how your reach is growing, and learn where to focus new engagement. It's all the data you need to scale your brand or business, fully integrated and clearly displayed.
There are so many community-created sites in the MTG space that we can't remember what we did without, like Scryfall, 17 Lands, and now MTG Scribe. Maybe you have the next great idea, and Squarespace can help you make that dream a reality.
Check out squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/LOL to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. And now, back to the show.
Let's talk about pivoting.
I've been doing a lot of pivoting, as we saw in my logs. Mm-hmm. Basically, I mean, we should preface this by saying that I'm pretty reluctant to draft Eldrazi for a number of reasons. One, I just want to stick it to Rhythian Chrysalis. Two, I don't.
There's only one way to bring down the win rate of Rhythian Chrysalis, and that's to beat it.
That's
not
right.
To play it yourself.
Exactly. Because if I play it, it's just gonna I'm gonna inflate.
You're just gonna elevate it.
We can't have that.
Exactly.
I need lesser people playing it so that I can beat them and just kind of show people the way.
Exactly.
I also just don't love the way Eldrazi as a deck feels. Like, ramp decks are my least favorite style of deck to play. And I don't know. I just feel like drafting Eldrazi, much like the Artifacts deck, is pretty high risk, a much higher reward than the Artifacts deck if you hit. I just taking cards like a 2-drop ramper or things like that pretty aggressively feels bad to me. I don't love it. Other good stuff in the pack.
I feel
Nightshade Dryad.
I feel so differently about, because I like the puzzle of, especially with the Eldrazi deck as a ramp deck, and this is very off topic, but I like the puzzle of sequencing ramping stuff, especially like figuring out, okay, do I want to have this thing in play so that then, like, do I want Path of Annihilation in play first, or do I want my Chrysalis in play first, so then my Annihilation will let me potentially double spell the turn after?
The Eldrazi deck doesn't get a double spell. Who are we kidding? It's just one spell per turn over and over, unless you have Path of Annihilation.
I think we may have found perhaps an issue in your playing with this deck is that you think you can't double spell with it. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but yeah. But I do think, like, it, as we have seen in, I think, a number of sets recently, there is a bit of a, like, there's a known quantity in the format. Everyone knows that Chrysalis is busted and that green Eldrazi decks are very good. And so when you have a start of like, okay, I'm going to take Path of Annihilation, or I see a Path of Annihilation in the draft, or start of Chrysalis, or you see a Chrysalis in the draft, you're entering into a game of chicken. In my mind, right?
Yes, I agree.
And like Ben is, I think, definitely on the end of the spectrum.
As soon as I see the other car coming, like, I'm off like 100 yards out.
He's looking for any reason to get pushed off of it. I think other people perhaps maybe a bit more tempered in their approach and think about like the reasons to hold on and what's going to lock them in and what's going to be a reason to move off or to splash or whatever. What are the pivot points? And we're going to talk about that because I think that's a big part of it. But I also think in a larger, even beyond that, like all of the sort of streamlined synergy things that happen in the format are also kind of like, if they don't come together or you don't end up in a spot where you're doing a good mix of two synergy decks, right? The energy Eldrazi decks, like you also, those are my train wrecks is when I'm like, all right, I'm going to gumption my way into black red or whatever. And then it's just not there. And I don't have an off ramp plan. That's when I have my train wreck drafts.
That's fair. I think red black is the scariest. I think red black is the next most likely deck that happens for. I generally want to see Cranial Rams kind of late before I commit to Black Red.
I want to make the hottest of hot takes, which is that I don't think Cranial Ram is that good.
What? That is blasphemy. You can't say things like that in the podcast, my friend.
I don't know. You're saying you don't think Eldrazi gets the double spell and you don't want to draft it. We're both, I'm just trying to keep pace even with you. I can't put my finger on it and I can't express it. And I wanted to be like, well, let me sort like game in hand win rate for Black Red deck specifically. And obviously Cranial Ram is like up there. Like I wanted to be like, I bet it's not even that good in Black Red, but like it is. I think it goes back to what you said about if you want to be aggressive, having to get through evasively or with trample. And mm-hmm. I feel like Cranial Ram not doing either of those things is just, it just ends up feeling more awkward to me. I'm sure this is a user and skill issue, but I'm not in love with Cranial Ram.
Like I think much like what your incredulation at my Eldrazi statements, mm-hmm. I think Terramanders and the refurbished familiars and suiting it up on flyers or putting it on a charge bug that has menace, like it's not that it needs it. Like you play it, you trade it off, and then you're always threatening to equip it on something, so your opponent kind of has to count for that, but you don't always have to spend your mana to do that.
Are you ever just happily getting rid of the germ and moving it to one of those flyers?
Yes.
Okay. I think that might be the thing I'm never doing.
Yeah. I mean, like, my goal with Black Red is to get the game done, like, as quickly as humanly possible. Vomit my hand as quickly as humanly possible.
Yeah. I think my goal with Black Red is to just not draft it, but that's, yeah.
Okay, so back to the pivoting.
Back to pivoting.
That was a nice heart-to-heart we had there.
Thank you.
Why are you pivoting? I think because your archetype that you're currently drafting, you think you're getting cut out of. Like, so I think the most clear way to state that is you're being incentivized to take weaker cards, looking at you, Nightshade Dryad, or other things when there are better options in the packs. Like, you can't be taking Nightshade Dryad over, you know, Conduit Goblin or... some of the other gold cards.
Yes, you can. Yeah. Yes, you can.
We're off to a great start here.
I appreciate the sentiment.
Rosie the Riveter.
Yes, you can. No, yeah. I won't get bogged down in the muck of the actual examples. Because context is also important. Like, what you're describing is like, it matters what your start of that draft is too, where you're taking Nightshade Dryad over Conduit Goblin, right? Like, do you have Path of Annihilation and Writhing Chrysalis? Then yeah, you're absolutely taking Dryad there, right? Like,
yes, yes.
You had to think about it for a minute, folks.
I did have to think about it for a second, but yeah. I would take Nightshade Dryad over Conduit Goblin in that spot.
Yeah, but your point stands that like on power level, if it's pack one, pick one, though I reject the premise that we're ever picking between two commons, pack one, pick one.
That's clearly stated.
Yes. Conduit Goblin is much better than Dryad in my mind.
Yes, I am glad that we line up on that. So the other thing that would lead you to pivoting is you're seeing signals for other archetypes, preferably that touches at least one of your two initial colors. Like, say you're starting red green and you're pretty deep into red and you see that Conduit Goblin, or maybe you're blue red energy and you see some sneaky snackers that touch blue. But and notice that I'm listing those gold commons. I think the gold commons that are cheap in the streamlined decks, like the decks that really want to be hyper focused two colors, I think those are the biggest signals you can see in the format, like seeing those picks 5 through 8 or wheeling them,
because they're such great. That's a spot where like the rarity of commons matters. And that's another great way to, as I'm trying to figure out how we're thinking about commons and the play booster era, but it's a great way to think about like, you can get so many of them. Like if you're wheeling Sneaky Snacker and then you decide to move into blue black for it, and you can think to yourself, any Sneaky Snacker that gets opened and I'm likely to maybe get two more. They're going to make their way to you. And that is a powerful recipe, especially for something where you're throwing away some earlier picks to pivot.
Right. And I think the last big reason to pivot, or last common reason to pivot, is in pack two, opening a premium card that you can either splash, or that, and maybe it's a red, red card, or maybe it's a black, black card. Maybe you open a Crabomination in pack two
and you want to move into black for that, I think opening some of the better, stronger individual rares in the set could also be a reason to pivot, especially if you don't have a super streamlined synergistic start.
I think it's like there's a chain reaction sometimes too of like you get a late card that isn't perhaps, I think you have a draft later on where this might actually exactly happen. You get a late gold card like Wheela, Soulfire of Emissary, or Emissary of Soulfire, the one white blue 1/4 gets 3 energy, and then you can pay 2 energy to put exalted counters on stuff, and then you open a Genku, and so maybe the Emissary isn't enough to be like, oh, now I'm pivoting to blue white, but that plus, oh, now I've opened something powerful that's in that same space, that powerful card I'm opening plus the information I got from that card wheeling or going super late in pack one is going to add up to me saying, all right, now I'm moving into this deck.
Yes, 100%.
The thing that of point two of like, and obviously it's like, this is clear, this is how you read signals, like cards that are powerful going later than they should. But the interesting thing that, and the thing that I struggle with, the thing that I think is specific to this format is there are packs where there are clear best cards, and then there are packs where the power level is flat.
Yes.
And knowing when, and I think it's easy to, because a lot of the packs I think are flat power level, it's easy to then think that the, like, to miss the packs where there are clear best cards. Because you've gone, like, what I'm talking about is like a spot where you're like, let's say you start with a card that's worth taking, like a, let's just say Chrysalis. So you start with Writhing Chrysalis, and then you see like flat power level, flat power level. And so you're just taking cards that go along with Writhing Chrysalis.
Yes.
And then you see Riddlegate Gargoyle. And it's like, well, that's the clear best card in the pack. It is hard.
And that's like, the one, that's the white blue 2/2, yes. Right?
White blue 2/2 gets 3 energy, and you pay 2 energy to give something lifelink when it attacks. And maybe pick 4 is a little early for that. But let's say you've even got flat power level on whatever, pick 4 and pick 5, and then pick 6, you see the Gargoyle. It is really hard for me in that spot, if I've gone down the flat power level path, to make those pivots, I think. Those are the ones I think are the hardest for me to make. When I'm like, well, I'm already so deep in this other thing. It's like, yeah, but that other thing you don't have any reason to do other than your pack one, pick one. So like, why not speculate? And then because there's also a depth of playability in this format, I find that I can, you know, if then I take Gargoyle and then it's flat power level again, well, what do I give weight to in that?
You're pack? Going back to Writhing Chrysalis at that point because it's a better card probably.
Okay. Well, yeah, but then I want to keep turning the knobs on this example to be like, okay, but what if it's not as good a card as Chrysalis, and then Riddlegate Gargoyle is a little bit better of a card. I don't know, like, but it's, those are the ones that's hard for me because like when I'm deeper in one lane, but I don't really have that strong of a reason to be in that lane, I find it hard to jump ship because at a certain point I have to decide. I'm always waiting. I'm like, can I just get some like big signal? And then after that, a clear path that supports that signal? That doesn't always happen.
No, draft is messy and beautiful, that's part of why it's great. But I think one of the things that sticks out to me in that specific example is that the Riddlegate Gargoyle doesn't touch either of the two colors of the Writhing Chrysalis. If it does, I mean, I don't know why you would be doing this, but let's say it's the 3/3 ooze that's one black green that you can adapt, put a +1/+1 counter on. Then all of a sudden you can take green cards and still give yourself outs to be both decks without feeling like you're choosing between option A and option B. There's a Venn diagram in the middle for you. And when they're both like blue, white, red, green, there's no space in the middle to hold on to in the Venn diagram, which makes it really tough. And then you do get pulled in other directions. So I, like, much like you reject the premise of not first picking between two commons in the play booster era, I kind of reject that premise because I don't know that Riddlegate Gargoyle is good enough, but I'm with you with the intent the example. I'm
just trying to come up with examples on the fly here, but yeah.
Sure, but I think it's not quite enough. Like, there are reasons to totally jump ship like that. Like, let's say you get a Genku, pick 6. Like,
sure.
Right? Like, you take the Genku and you scrap everything and you're blue-white from that point forward. So I think, like, there's the more you're pivoting, like, the further you're turning when you pivot,
if you're going the full power
level of the, the higher the power level of the card that you're taking, needs to be. But I think ideally, maybe you're turning 90 degrees, like you're finding something that shares a color. Yes. And then you have that space in the middle of the Venn diagram where you can kind of toe the line to make your decisions easier.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's almost July. I can't believe the year is halfway through. What's something you're proud of in 2024 so far?
I'm proud of handling change in my life really well. I think you're well aware that I am a man of habits and a man of my ways. I have my turkey sandwich for lunch. and recently my life has changed a lot. I've started dating a girl in the last year. We're hiring a new assistant band director at my school. So my job is changing. I've been trying to be patient with myself and realizing that things are going to be changing and that that's okay. And that changes can be a good thing and that I'm trying to embrace it.
I don't know who you are and what you've done with Ben, but I like this guy. When life goes so fast, it's important to take a moment to celebrate your wins and make adjustments for the rest of the year. Therapy can help you take stock of your progress and set achievable goals for the next 6 months.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Take a moment. Visit BetterHelp.com/lords today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now back to the show. So what are the questions you're asking yourself as you're drafting?
I think the first thing is I would encourage everybody to check in after every single pick. And the first question I would ask is, am I taking the best card out of the pack? And if the answer to that is no, I think you should have a very good reason why. Let's say your Chrysalis pick six Riddlegate Gargoyle example. You still take the Gargoyle, and then you just feel it out from there. Maybe you never take another blue or white card because you keep seeing some red and green cards that can go with your Chrysalis, and you want to play your Chrysalis because it's a better card. But maybe red and green dries up totally, and you have to take a couple white cards, and then you open a really good white card, and that's when and how you pivot. So I think speculating on picks, a lot of times we say take a flyer on a pick, and we always get questions in the Discord about like the slang for what is take a flyer. It's taking a card that is very high upside if it does make your deck, but is very low percentage to actually make your deck based on what you've already picked so far. And I think Riddlegate Gargoyle would be that in the scenario you've described. But there's tons of times that's happened to me. I speculate pretty aggressively on picks so that that is how I've found I'm pivoting the best in the format.
Do you find that, like, usually I say that basically pack two, pick two to pack two, pick four is usually when you lock in what your deck is in a normal format. Is that the same here?
It's the same here for me. I think I'm either locked at the end of pack one, like either pack one, I think drafts go a couple ways. This format, either you start down a path and the path is open and you're locked, like, and maybe you don't necessarily know what it's going to be, but frequently for me it's been energy, and I know I'm some sort of energy at the end of pack one and I'll figure it out later, but I'm not too worried about that once I've identified that energy is open, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think the other most common type of draft is you start something, feel that you're pushed off of it, and pivot out for one of the two color commons. Like, you pivot for a Conduit Goblin, you pivot for a Riddlegate Gargoyle, you pivot for a Sneaky Snacker. Those are the most common types of drafts to me. And then I think also lately I've had a string of opening awesome opens in pack two. Mm. And I've been pivoting in pack two, early pack two, like pack two, pick one, trying to see if it'll work. And it has actually kind of worked out. Other thoughts to be talking to yourself about during the draft after every pick. And I think it's so important in this format because the picks change so much. And I think the other thing that's settled down to me, and I think maybe would not have if you haven't done a ton of drafts. Like, if you're on draft 5 through 10, I think the format can still be pretty overwhelming. Like, I remember initially, like, you see the packs that have the Sneaky Snackers and the Faithful Watchdog, and then it's got some other thing that goes in some other deck, and you can just feel pulled in all these different directions, but none of the cards really stand out above each other.
That's that flat power level kind of pack that we're talking about.
Right. And I think when I look at those packs now, I feel less like, well, am I supposed to jump ship for this Faithful Watchdog? Am I supposed to jump ship for this Sneaky Snacker? Largely the answer is no, until they're definitely the best cards in the pack. I just have a better sense of what I'm willing to jump ship for and why, but hard to convey that through a podcast unless you've played with the cards quite a bit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I think the other thing you should be thinking about is what archetypes am I still open to after every single pick? Like pack one, pick one, Galvanic Discharge, you're open to any red color pair. You know what I mean? Pack one, pick one, Writhing Crystals, you're Eldrazi. And I think much more room to explore there, but generally that's what you're hoping to do. And then maybe your next pick is Attune the Narrative, and then you're open to Energy or Eldrazi or whatever. But just that thought process of, am I taking the best card? Hopefully yes. If not, very good reason why you're not. And then what archetypes am I open to? And then lastly, what archetype am I most likely to end up in right now? Like after every single pick, like after pack one, pick three, most likely to be Eldrazi. Pack one, pick four, still most likely to be Eldrazi. Pack one, pick five, I'm like 80% to be Eldrazi, but maybe there's 20% chance I end up red, black artifacts because I got a late cranial ram.
This is, I love this. This is so like my frequent question that I ask myself is mid pick. I'm like, okay, what is the path? When if I take this card, what is the path where it ends up in my deck? Like I think about, well, how does the draft play out? But you're talking about, okay, you've made your pick and now assess like what, I mean, it's sort of like, you're probably doing it at the same time. You're like, okay, when do I take, when, as I'm taking a card, what archetypes am I open to, whatever. But like, it's interesting. You're sort of like taking stock of what you've drafted after each pick rather than like doing it in the moment with the pick, you know?
I think I do it afterwards. I mean, I'll be, if I'm torn between two cards, which is not that often. I mean, sometimes I
What's it like?
If I'm torn between two cards, I'm doing it in real time, like for this card and this card. But more than anything, after I make the pick, I'm trying to see how many paths I have left available to me. Like you start out with 10 paths and then you're narrowing down to three or four paths pretty quickly. And then can you keep those three or four paths open before you narrow it down to two? And then you're trying to decide between, you know, blue, red or red, white, or you're trying to decide between red, green or blue, red. And then you're ultimately honing it down to one. But the longer you can keep the other paths open, generally the better, but not always. I think the more we've done the podcast and the more I've drafted, I just kind of want to hope to end up in a deck, like, and have a smooth draft. Those are the best drafts. I mean, that's probably obvious.
Yeah.
I think the thing I love about draft is pivoting and bobbing and weaving and ducking and rounding the corner and feeling smart that I found this open lane that other people maybe wouldn't have left themselves an avenue to get into.
Mm-hmm.
But those still aren't oftentimes the best decks. The best decks are just the ones where you take red cards the whole way and like red's open and your deck is great because red was open, like where anybody could have drafted the seat. So I think I'm more open to doing that, but I think that's one of the things I like about MH3 is I think it does provide more opportunities to bob and weave than the average set.
For sure.
So for thinking about pivoting, week one, super hot on red, right? As the best color because of how flexible it was. I don't know that, I think red's the best color for me. I think if you like the Eldrazi life, green might be the best color for you. But I think red is the color that leaves you the most flexible to pivoting around. You probably
like
get into
all the red decks so much, and I don't like all the green decks. I mean, I was messing around 17 lands, just trying to check in yesterday with like my own feelings about the format because I still really don't like green black, and I don't really like green white that much either. But green white is doing well, like it is a high performing color pair. I think just below red green and red white, but like. I think about, I like red, green, I like red, white, I love red, blue energy, and I know I'm talking about my dislike for red, black, but I'll still play red, black. I'm happy to draft it if it's open.
Yeah, all the red decks are good, and if you're heavy red, you leave yourself out to pivot into all the red decks. It's very hard to train red if you start
nice,
deep into red.
So many good little cross synergies, like in inherent cross synergies, that's like... And it touches all the spaces really well, like the artifact space and the energy space and the Eldrazi space. Like, yeah, I really like red too.
And I think I'm not necessarily trying as hard to start red as I would in other formats. Like once I've identified a color I really like or a draft strategy I really like, I try to do it pretty hard. This format is too synergistic to do that with a color. Like you still have to follow the archetypes, I think, more than you follow a color, but... If it works out for me to get into red, that is where I feel the safest and the most creative. But I'm coming around. There's been someone in the Discord who's been like lobbying me and you. I think they've been tagging both of us, maybe just me, for like brewing around in white. I'm yes. kind of liking white as a space to brew lately.
Yes.
But I think white's just really open. I think the Eldrazi stuff's pretty contested largely, which is partially why I'm staying away from it, because I don't want to fight for it. But there's other places other than red to do some brewing as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And we've got good news, which is that the wheel seems to be back here. Play boosters be darned. We've got the wheel.
Wheel's back. I love it. And I think paying attention to those cheap commons, like we said, sometimes you're going to get them on the wheel. And those are good cards. You're wheeling Sneaky Snackers. I think Riddlegate Gargoyle is also another common one that wheels. But I think if you can pay attention to those cheap commons and just other synergy cards, I think you can get real gems on the wheel in this format if you identify an open archetype that other people at your table aren't drafting.
And I think that one of the skills in this format in particular is, even if you have like a slam dunk clear first pick, is clocking those kinds of cards in your first few packs. And just yes. having them rolling around in the back of your mind, be like, okay, whatever, I'm gonna take Chrysalis, or I'm taking Genku. And these are just cards that are in my mind because we've been talking about them. But like, if there's a Sneaky Snacker in the pack, just make sure you're like, okay, I'm eyeballing that, so that if the draft starts to go away where you're feeling like, this isn't actually that open, that should be your first direction to try and pivot to. If you're like, I mean, obviously, if there's something clear in the pack to pivot to, take that. But if then it's like, all right, flat power level, or this is a clear best card, and then I'm going some other route, well, then maybe you start to, I'm going to take this Wither and Bloom, even though it doesn't go with my Writhing Chrysalis, because that Sneaky Snacker might come around, and that's a backdoor for me.
Yes, absolutely. But I think that goes back to, I think, speculating aggressively as well. But speculating, it gives you, when you clock those cheap commons early yes. in the first few picks, it gives you a reason and a direction to speculate towards.
Mm-hmm. Right, rather than, it's just, you're looking for, in those flat power level packs, you're looking for tiebreakers. Like what?
Yes.
What is going to give weight to something? And if it's not something you've already picked, then you give weight to something that you might get in the future.
Yes. So I think for the commons, in priority order of seeing them, like just kind of how much they matter or push you towards stuff. I mean, Writhing Chrysalis, obviously number one. I think Conduit Goblin number two. I would say Riddlegate Gargoyle number three. Riddlegate Gargoyle goes way too late in the best of one queues on Arena, in my opinion, just from my personal experience. I've been playing a lot of blue-white lately. Just also as I've been more willing to be base white, that's happened a lot more. Cranial Ram, fourth. Sneaky Snacker, fifth. Faithful Watchdog, I'm less jazzed about pivoting for a Faithful Watchdog at this point. And then past Faithful Watchdog, the rest really don't impact decisions that much for me, the other four.
I guess it's not wheeling because you're first picking it, the Snapping Void Craw, the blue green ramper. You and LSV are just first picking it, so it'll never wheel.
I'm not first picking that card, to be clear. Yeah, that one does not matter to me so much, but that also is not likely to wheel. It's the idea of pivoting into Eldrazi at this point in the format is like mind-blowing to me. I just cannot imagine.
It's hard.
That right? Happening.
You start energy or something, you start artifacts, and then like get something that pulls you into Eldrazi late. Like you're never getting past Chrysalis in pack one.
I mean, and you might in weird best of one pods, but I think generally the word is out on Eldrazi at this point.
Sure, yeah. Okay. So if you're not pivoting into Eldrazi, what would you be pivoting into and for what?
I mean, for me, most commonly is energy. The thing I've drafted the most by far are energy decks. And I think reasons to pivot into energy, I mean, it's the good energy cards. Amped Raptor, number one. Scurry of Gremlins, number two. Those are like the two clear best energy cards, I think, not close to close. And then I think as far as signals, the late Riddlegate Gargoyles or late Conduit Goblins, those would be things that like pique my interest. I'll speculate on, see if I can get into the deck. Past that, late Tune the Narratives or Galvanic Discharges. And it's weird because I think Galvanic Discharge certainly a better early pick than Riddlegate Gargoyles or Conduit Goblins, but I think it's less of a signal for an archetype. Like if we're talking
correct.
About pivoting.
It's just good.
Yeah. For you to want to pivot, at least for me, my thought process is I want to have identified an archetype that I think no one else is drafting so that I'm likely to get a lot of good gold cards late. So tunes and discharges. I also really like Emissary of Soulfire. That's the uncommon 1/4 that makes 3 energy. But I think it's less of a signal than the Riddlegate Gargoyles or the Conduit Goblins. Or maybe it's on par with them, but it's easier to splash
right.
those cards in like a Jeskai energy deck. I don't know. It's just kind of a different thing. And then lastly, the late engines, which are some of the most important cards for the energy deck. But also, I've gotten myself in trouble pivoting for these cards. So like your Is It Generatorium, your Phyrexian Ironworks. Phyrexian Ironworks is one that pretty consistently gets me in trouble when I try to pivot for it.
Uh-huh.
Because like you really need, those are more reasons than, or they're more rewards than they are reasons. Almost all of the engine-y type cards, Unstable Amulet. You really need great ways to produce energy before those cards are good. Like you don't want to be playing the 4-drop 3/2 dragon make 3 energy to turn on your Unstable Amulet, your Phyrexian Ironworks. Can you? Yes, but sometimes you end up in a spot where you have to be doing that because you moved in for some of the things that were supposed to be rewards rather than reasons. So I think I'm less willing to pivot into it for the late engines.
I was surprised to see you not list Royal Cartographer here. That's my one gripe, because I think, and maybe you think Cartographer is less, like it's just a pure good card or something.
I think that's where it is, just a pure good card. But it's in the Amped Raptor Scurry of Gremlins right. tier, I think. Probably that's, below those is where I would put it, but above the Gargoyles or the Conduit Goblins. As far as reasons to pivot, I think it's less of a reason to pivot into it for me, because it doesn't make energy. It's tough. Like
take your fetch lands, baby.
I do take my fetch lands, but you got to get up to 6 before it does something. It to me falls almost in the engine category.
Yeah. See, I think of these cards, like, and again, don't need to get in the muck about this. Bespoke Battle Wagon and Cartographer. And Cartographer, I think, best of the bunch, clearly. But those two are in a different class than Generatorium, Ironworks, and Amulet to me.
We're going to get into the weeds because I disagree. Okay. I think Bespoke Battle Wagon is the worst of these, maybe other than Is It Generatorium. I've come way down on Bespoke Battle Wagon.
Really?
I have played it a lot. Like I feel pretty confident in my assessment of the card. It takes a long time to get going. Like for it to be good, you don't want to be tapping it for 2 energy. Like if you're ever tapping it for 2 energy, it's horrifically slow.
Yes.
Like you really need, when it comes down, to already have 4 energy for it to be good, for it to be, it's a disaster. I think if that's your turn 4 play and you don't already have 4
and you can't animate
it into a blocker, like to threaten to animate it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can accomplish that, very good card. But if you can't, it's really poor. I think my ordering would be Cartographer 1, Unstable Amulet 2, Ironworks 3, Battle Wagon 4, Generatorium 5. The Battle Wagon has been pretty bad for me sometimes. And Ironworks 2. Like, I've played with both of those cards a ton. Unstable Amulet is just good.
I think to zoom out a little bit from this is just to think about, like, one of the things is that, like, these are signals to pivot, yes. But then you also have to know, like, what they're not all going. It's not like I'm pivoting into energy and that's a deck. It's like, no. You've got so many different flavors of the rainbow here, because there's red, white aggro energy. There's blue, white aggro energy. There's blue, red control energy. There's, are you doing a Jeskai mix? Like,
and there's just like a Jeskai make as much energy as possible.
Right.
Decks also.
Right. Those are my favorite personally, but they're also a little finicky. But yeah, this is a great list of cards, and whatever order you have them in, whatever. But I think this is a great starting point for energy.
But it's also not as simple as, okay, I saw a pack one, pick six, Riddlegate Gargoyle. Now I'm blue, white energy. I'm pivoting.
No,
that's not it. Like, that's the start of pivoting. Like, you've turned 10 degrees at that point. And there have to be subsequent things to happen, like future Riddlegate Gargoyles, or maybe you wheel attune the narrative or whatever before you're willing to like
fully
turn all the way.
Mm-hmm.
You're just thinking about it at that point. You're thinking about asking the girl out to prom. You haven't even thought about what the specific promposal is yet. Then you got to get to what you're going to do for the promposal. Then you got to execute. Then she's got to say yes. Like, there's a lot that still needs to happen.
For sure.
So if we're talking pivoting into artifacts, much smaller list. I think Cranial Ram 1, Ethereum Terramander 2, Refurbished Familiar 3. And then I think just with the thought that you have to have the one drops and you have to be explosive for black red.
Again, and maybe this is just a good card. Does Marionette Apprentice not belong on this list?
Yeah, I mean, it does in the sense that it goes in the deck. But to me, that's not a signal to draft black-red artifacts. That's a signal to draft
black. Okay.
Yes, and like I think for, I was thinking about pivoting into a specific archetype. And Marionette Apprentice is just a good card. Also, probably for me, I'm sure my win rate with Marionette Apprentice is abysmal because I just pivot way too much for it early in the format before I knew what I was doing. And then last list is reasons to pivot out of Eldrazi, which I think is a pretty important skill set at this point if you're going to go after the deck. So I think things that you should be aware of if you're thinking about pivoting out of Eldrazi, feeling like green is cut, I think that would be thing number one. Like, you're not seeing just the dearth of green commons that you would expect. Like, if you're not seeing some late Nightshade Dryads or some late Eldrazi repurposers or even the stupid adaptive root wall.
When you say late, what do you mean?
I mean, like, picks 6 through 8.
Okay.
Like, if you're not seeing those types of cards there, if you're not wheeling, like, if on the wheel there's no green cards or whatever, like, and there are Sneaky Snackers or there are Riddlegate Gargoyles, like, you better believe, personally, I'm thinking about, okay, can I get out of this? And I think the other thing that runs into you maybe wanting to pivot out of Eldrazi is feeling like you're having to spend higher picks on some of those common enablers, like the things that will ramp you, or maybe like a Basking Brood Scale. If you're spending a high pick on a Basking Brood Scale, which is the adapt root walla, it's really tough for me to take something like Basking Brood Scale to pair with my Writhing Chrysalis over a Conduit Goblin, for example. Like, there's just a huge gap in power level between those cards. And I know I keep coming back to Conduit Goblin because I think that's kind of the poster child for best common in a streamlined archetype that can go late, depending on what your draft pot is doing.
Yeah. Well, because I think you're not only talking about the power of the card when you're comparing Brood Scale to Conduit Goblin, you're also talking about the power of the deck you expect to get when you're making those picks at the time you're making them. Like, the power when you're taking like Brood, like Conduit Goblin is a much higher pick for the energy deck than Brood Scale is for a green Eldrazi deck. And so getting Conduit Goblin early, you feel fine because you're like, I'm gonna get to support this. Taking Brood Scale early, you're like, this is when I'm supposed to be taking some of my best cards, and I'm taking like a fine role player for the deck.
Right. How are you on the modified life? Like, I just basically haven't played it, though. Like, I played green white once early in the format and it was awesome. But since then, I just have gotten into it way less because I've moved Faithful Watchdog down in my pick order. And it's really tough to be green white if you don't aggressively take Faithful Watchdogs.
One of the things that I realized, this is just from one draft, but one of the things I kind of realized in this draft, I drafted a green white deck the other day. I think I took an early Wombat because I was like, I kind of want to like try, like take this early, see if it's open. It seemed like it's been consistently open in the draft. So I felt like an early Wombat. And we talked about last week being like, I think Cursed Wombat like is the reason to draft that deck. So I took those early, ended up sort of getting moved off of it, played green white, splashing a couple Wombats. But the bleed isn't there that I was sort of intellectually expecting. I was like, oh, there's going to be like overlap because it's Abzan modified. But it's not really.
It's very distinct.
It's auras and it's enchantments and artifacts for green white, and it's counters for black green. But the weird thing is that the Watchdog makes me think that there's bleed. There,
yeah.
But there isn't. And so, there isn't,
because you have to be super streamlined green white for the Watchdog to be good.
And you think, like, well, the Watchdog with the Wombat, it's like, then it's a 4/4. Who cares? Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Well, and you also have a green white card and a green black card that are two drops.
That are two drops. Yes. Yeah. So,
which I think you definitely want to avoid if you're trying to be something that's not winning the late game.
So that was one thing that I like realized was like, oh, there's not like, and I'm sure, and if I'm willing to be proven wrong, or show me like folks in the Discord showing us about how to cook with white last week, like willing to be proven wrong, if folks want to share some decks that are good in the Abzan space so that there's some synergies I'm missing. But I think in the streamlined sense, I'm not that excited about those color pairs.
I agree. And I think the thing, and so I don't have much advice for how to pivot into it because I just haven't been doing that. But I think the thing that it suffers from is it loses the early game to good energy decks and good artifacts decks. Red white. That's good energy decks.
Yeah.
And then it loses the late game to the Eldrazi decks. Like, it's just at a weird spot on the game length, desired game length for the format. Like, it's not, it's scissors in a format where you either want to be paper or rock.
Yeah.
All right. So if we're taking a look at some specific drafts here, we got my first log. You ready to take a seat at the old round table here?
Yeah. And I think we'll treat this. We're going to try and zoom in to some pivot points rather than get in the muck about each pick.
So pack one, pick one. You start off the daddy-o himself, Writhing Chrysalis in your pile. You're snapping it up. Some other good green cards to note, but Writhing Chrysalis, I think a pretty clear pick there.
I think it's worth pointing out, as we were talking about before, there is a Sneaky Snacker in the pack and a Riddlegate Gargoyle in the pack. Two of the like cards that we're thinking about. Okay, let's make sure, even though we're taking the Daddy-O first, let's make sure we're clocking those as possible wheels.
Yes, we also get questions about clocking a lot. That means taking note of.
Thank you.
You're like noticing. Yes.
This is the Lords of Limited glossary here.
Yes. I think clocking and taking a flyer are two most common slang things that we do in these draft log reviews. Pack one, pick two. I think a clear Solar Transformer out of a fairly flat pack. This is kind of the start we were talking about, where mm-hmm. you have Writhing Chrysalis. You want to keep following Writhing Chrysalis, so you do, because there's nothing else good enough that pulls you in another direction. And one of the best things you can do with Writhing Chrysalis is cast it on turn three, and Solar Transformer helps you do that. Also helps you splash it if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Pack one, pick three. It's a little more interesting here. I think you've got a choice between Kozilek's Unsealing, which is the two and a blue uncommon enchantment. Whenever you cast something mana value seven or greater, you draw three. If it's a creature, four, five, or six, you make the two spawn tokens. There's also a Witherin Bloom in the pack. One and a black instant target creature gets -3/-3. Any thoughts between those two?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's my aversion. I get a little Ben in me here, being averse to taking Unsealing. I just feel like everything has to go right for Unsealing to be good, like in the draft. And if everything's going right in the draft, I'm going to get a good deck anyway. I just found Unsealing to be a little finicky, so I might just take Wither and Bloom. I guess you could also just take, like, there's a couple green MDFCs that you could take too. It's we're really just in flat power level territory here, I think.
Yes. I think one thing that's interesting to note is when I was doing this draft and I had the Chrysalis, I, again, don't have that much experience piloting the Eldrazi deck. I played against it a ton, but I think this is something that can happen to listeners of the podcast too, where you hear content creators talk about cards or a deck that's great, like you want to be Eldrazi. And to me, I would have said prior to, I think largely piloting the deck that I did yesterday in the open as a sealed deck that had Path of Annihilation, I would have told you that Kozilek's Unsealing was equivalent to Path of Annihilation in terms of power level. Mm. But in reality, there's a pretty big power level gap there, right? Path of Annihilation is significantly better than Kozilek's Unsealing.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
That's very fair in my mind. Like, the path making the two spawn is huge.
Up front, right?
Yeah.
With no work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I did take the Kozilek's Unsealing here. So let's move forward with that. Following it up, super terrible pack, very flat. It's taking a Frogmere Enforcer as a seven drop to maybe like go along with our Kozilek's Unsealing, which is
okay.
Probably not right here, but we also have the Solar Transformer. I don't know what I was thinking with this pick, but there's basically nothing. There's a Polluted Delta. There's a Grixis Landscape. There's some blue and some black cards. Mm-hmm. Only red card in the pack, Thriving Skyclaw. No green cards in the pack. That's more the relevant thing here rather than what I took.
Is what's not here.
Yes, because the pack is horrible. So you're putting no weight on this pick, but you are thinking, maybe I'm going to need to get off Eldrazi at this point.
And this is such a great example because there's a clear signal or the potential of a signal that you shouldn't be drafting what you're drafting, but there is no direction presented.
Nothing, yes.
Yeah.
Nothing that says, hey, do this other thing instead.
It's just like, you probably don't want to do the thing you're doing.
So pack one, pick five. Again, like very terrible flat pack here. There's another Grixis Landscape. There's an MDFC in Bridgeworks Battle. The green MDFC that's +2/+2 in fight. And then there's a Golden Tail Trainer, which is the green-white uncommon, but again, like, I'm just not willing to pivot for that card. No. And even if this were Faithful Watchdog, which I think is better or more important to the deck, not willing to pivot for that at this point. Might take Faithful Watchdog as a speculative pick, but it would have to be something pretty good. But right now I'm thinking I'm going to do some sort of Teemer Eldrazi stew still.
But to be clear, if there were Conduit Goblin, Riddlegate Gargoyle, Sneaky Snacker,
now is the time where you'd be speculating.
You would take like all three crazy of those here, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think it's just more, Cranial Ram.
Yeah. Yeah, I would take cranial RAM. I'd be less excited about the cranial RAM because it
would make your Frogmire Enforcer. Maybe a
Frogmire Enforcer not embarrassing.
Yeah.
that pick. This was very early on in the format, to be clear. So I took a Seething Landscape here. Pick six. Again, like no green. There's a Foul Strike as the only green card in the pack. So basically, after first picking Chrysalis and wanting to be Eldrazi, we've not managed to take a green card. Yeah. So like at this point, I'm like, okay, we've got to pivot off of this at this point.
So what? So you're still not really being presented with something. I mean, there's a Party Thrasher, which is pretty good. The one in a red 1/4 that lets you sort of like loot through. Like you can exile a card from your hand and then reveal
two. Card's fine. It doesn't give you card advantage though.
No, it's just selection, and it's like sort of roll of the dice selection.
So to me, I took Wither and Bloom here, thinking that. I remembered there was a Sneaky Snacker in pack one, pick one that I could potentially wheel. And I already had this Kozlex Unsealing. I was thinking maybe there was going to be some weird draw three like hybrid Eldrazi thing that I could do.
That's kind of cool.
Brew a little bit with Kozlex Unsealing. That's where my head was at this point. And then pick seven, took a Drownyard Lurker to keep the Eldrazi dream alive, as well as maybe make Kozlex Unsealing functional in some sort of a blue-black draw three deck had I wheeled the Sneaky Snacker. Pick eight, again, there's nothing, no red or green cards, and there is a Kami of Jealous Thirst. So I took that for the blue-black deck, and then pick nine, ding, 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 ding. We do wheel a Sneaky Snacker, don't wheel the Riddlegate Gargoyle. So very lucky that we wheeled the Snacker, not the Gargoyle, after building towards it. But I think even if Gargoyle wheels, you're taking Gargoyle, and you're just trying to figure some stuff out. Because what you started down was not open, as well as you saw horrible packs.
It's also not luck that like black cards float and then the blue black gold card wheeled, right? Like,
yeah, that's fair.
You're probably not going to see that happen. So like, you probably would have seen white cards open if Gargoyle was going to.
And then I would have been a good drafter and take the white cards. All right, sure. Yeah. Not luck. I'm great at drafting.
You're great at drafting.
Love that take.
I think that's just a great like the middle of the draft. Whatever. Like, you might look at this log. We'll share it in the show notes. You might go, oh man, I would have taken made different picks in the middle. That's less important than. Are you tracking the information that we're tracking here of like, okay, it's drying up. I don't have a
Eldrazi's clear... not open. Like the Eldrazi's things that not, matter.
Yeah.
What you pick in picks three through seven, six is largely irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Like you just have to notice that Eldrazi's not open and black is. Well, all the packs are terrible, which is tough.
And like, are you putting yourself... What I do like about Ben's picks is one, he's got the Sneaky Snacker in the back of his mind. And two, he's just like giving himself outs. Like, this isn't working. Because I think one of the things that happens for my train wrecks is that I go, this isn't working, but I don't know what else I'm supposed to do. So I'm just going to try and do this thing even harder. And like,
I don't like doing that in this format.
It's terrible. Those are like the worst drafts I have. But like, I can't be alone. And so that's why I think I really want to highlight it here to be like, what you want to do is when it's like the thing I'm doing isn't working. And I'm not being given anything else that's clear, you can kind of go into panic mode easily. And I think this is a great example of how to not go into panic mode.
I had a draft that I think we're probably not going to have time to get to, but started with a very good Eldrazi start. Like, just want to kind of narrate what Ethan's talking about there, where I'm very averse to, like, I'm just going to hold on and pray. I took Nadu pack one, Eldrazi Repurposer pick two, Invert Polarity pick three, Tune pick four, Ironworks got a way late territory color pick six, and I was thinking, yes, like this is it, I finally get to do Teamer Eldrazi. And then took a pick eight Conduit Goblin, pack one pick eight Conduit Goblin, with no other white cards, and Ironworks is my only red card. But like, I'm fine going into red white energy with a Conduit Goblin and Ironworks, and the pack rounded out with not much else other than a Thriving Sky Claw. But pack two, pick one, I opened Ocelot Pride and no green cards. There's a Nightshade Dryad. And I was streaming and chat was like, well, just take Nightshade Dryad and pray. Like, you've got a good Eldrazi start. And like, I just refuse to take a Nightshade Dryad, pick one, pack two. Well, like,
and this is an example of, I think, if you don't get the pick eight Conduit Goblin, I like taking Ocelot Pride a lot less.
Right.
It's the combo of that information of, I got the late red-white card. I'm opening this busted white one-drop. That combination is going to say, let's try and do this.
Well, and even then, I'm still thinking, when I take this Ocelot Pride, I'm thinking, I'm probably not going to play white. Like, that's literally my thought process after I make this pick. I'm thinking, I'm still, when we were talking about asking yourself those questions, I'm still, like, in my mind, 80 or 90% to be Team Eldrazi. I just, it was open enough in pack one that if it's where I'm supposed to be, I assume I will get a comparable card to Nightshade Dryad to fill up my two drop slot. But if it's not where I'm supposed to be and white flows, like, this is my chance to get into white if it's going to happen. This is very low opportunity cost. I'm giving up a Nightshade Dryad for the chance at spiking an insane white deck. So I take the pride, still think I'm not playing white, and then pack two, pick two, I get past Wrath of the Skies. And then all of a sudden I'm like, great, like thrilled. And that's how you pivot there. Like, you take speculative picks on high ceiling cards, and that's the way it had to happen. And that's, like, whatever, 5% to happen in a draft or something. But I left myself open to that 5% by speculating on high ceiling cards.
That's the thing that makes it so hard to podcast about, I think, or like I really wanted to do this, but, you know, as we were prepping for the episode, trying to figure out what's the best way to do it, is because it's not just one, like, aha moment. It's not just a, and then you are presented this pick six and it's a clear pivot and that's the direction your draft goes. It's like, take that. And now you're giving that 20% weight and you're giving the rest of what you've taken 80% weight in terms of where you're going to probably end up at the end of the draft. But then you take that 20% plus, and then how late is it? And then is there another card that follows up with it that's also a pivot card? Or, and then what do you open? And then what do you get past in pack two? Like, there's all of these elements to it combined to how you read signals.
It's very much a Rube Goldberg machine. Yeah. Like a different one every time. Like, sometimes the tennis ball drops straight down and bounces, and sometimes the tennis ball rolls through a little chute. Like, it's all always different. But I think let's just take another look at another draft. I think going through them and talking about thought processes are the best thing we can do. So this is another one of mine. Pack one, pick one. You take a Spymaster's Vault. That's the black land that can let you connive. Out of a very weak pack.
Yeah. Super flat. Like it, weak in the sense of there's probably like four cards you can, it's like a cube pack. There's like four cards you could take, and that's totally fine depending on where you want to go.
But I think just for the sake of this, like telling you where we went, easier.
Yes.
So pack one, pick two, again, super flat pack. You take a refurbished familiar to go along with your Spymaster's Vault. And I think you're clocking Riddlegate Gargoyle that could potentially wheel, as well as, like, there's some good green. There's an Eldrazi Repurposer. There's a Signature Slam, but nothing good enough to make me want to take something other than a black card after starting with a black card. So take Refurbished Familiar, pack one, pick two. Pack one, pick three. There is a spike in power level here that wants you to move off black. So the best card in the pack, far and away, Territory Color. That's the 4 and a green uncommon, the 7/5 reach. Landfall, whenever a land enters the battlefield, you can look at the top. If it's a creature, you'd get to draw it. And if it's not, you can surveil it into your graveyard. That card's insane. You take it here. And then pack one, pick four, the green keeps flowing. So there's kind of a choice here between Fel the Profane as an MDFC, destroy target creature planeswalker that's black, or Evolution Witness, which is the adapt regrowth, the Eternal Witness card. And I landed on the Evolution Witness after taking the Territory Sculler, or a Territory Color, because I thought it was a stronger signal for green. So, like, I just picked Spymaster's Vault and then second picked the Refurbished Familiar out of a very weak pack because I had the Spymaster's Vault. But as far as signals, we've seen better green signals. Like, the third pick Territory Color, fourth pick Evo Witness, along with a Brood Scale still being in the pack here and a Collective Resistance. Like, I feel like that's why I want to take the Evo Witness rather than Fel the Profane. Because the argument you could make is, well, Fel the Profane gives you three black cards. But, like, I don't really want to be black.
And right, I'm but the best card reasons. You have is color.
Right, is green. And green's the best color in the format and leads to the better decks in the format. So I think that's why I want to take Witness here as far as pivoting. Pack one, pick five, take a Breathe Your Last out of a very weak pack. That's the black one, instant speed, destroy target creature, or planeswalker. And then this is where the pivoting maybe starts to happen. So pack one, pick six, you've got two green cards, the Evo Witness and the color. You've got two black cards, the Refurbished Familiar and the Breathe Your Last, as well as the Spymaster's Vault. And you see a choice between Sneaky Snacker, the blue-black 2/1 flyer. When you draw your third card, it comes back into play, as well as Arcbound Condor, the two black-black flying modular 3. Whenever another artifact enters the battlefield in your control, target creature and opponent controls gets -1/-1 until end of turn. And then there's also a Kami of Jealous Thirstier, which you're not picking, but worth noting for the blue-black draw 3 deck.
This is really hard. This is a really hard pick, I think. Like, I would like to think that I would take Sneaky Snacker in the moment because I think it's like more signally going to lead to a better deck. I think I might just take Condor in the moment, which I think is a mistake. The
process of what? Like, where do you see yourself ending up if you take the Condor?
Black, green, bad deck.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you could make a case for Condor, but if we're talking about trying to make cards hit their ceilings,
right?
Like, that's what my mindset is always towards. Like, can I get this card in its optimal home where it's going to be performing its best? And, like, you could say, well, Condor's modular. It's got plus one counters for black green, so it's going to be doing that thing, and you've already got the refurbished familiar. Like, but I just think
you're just Condor already gonna be is pulled in so many different directions because you're going to be wanting artifacts for your familiar and your Condor, but green isn't going to provide that at all.
Right. That's my thought, is that we're going to end up with a lot of intrinsically good cards that are not in close to their best home, which I think is a recipe for disaster in this format. That's why I didn't take Condor here, because you could take it and say, well, I'm going to be black green. Like, this is going to be great. I'm going to do black green counters. And I just don't think that's a very good deck. And I think also you're not giving up that much here. Like, if you are going to be green black, you're not like Arcbound Condor is not a critical piece of a good black green deck. Would it go in there? Would you play it? Yeah, sure, probably. Sneaky Snacker is a critical piece of a blue black deck. It is one of the most important cards.
And you're likely to, if you end up in blue black, so if you think of like, okay, what's the archetype I'm going to end up in when I take Snacker? Well, it's blue black. How many picks of what you've drafted are going to make this blue black deck? It's only two. It's only Breathe Your Last and Vault. Maybe Refurbished Familiar, but you're not going to give any weight to that. And blue is not really giving you any artifacts to ramp that out. But I think that's okay. Like, I think it's okay to be like, I'm going to throw away three picks if I end up blue black, because you're giving yourself an out to the ceiling of an archetype.
Yes, that's where my head's at. And with the cards we've drafted so far, it looks like we've got a black-green start. Why not stick with the black-green start with Condor? But like, if you go back to those questions you're asking yourself, I think at this point I'm like 10% to be black-green or something, because I don't want to be black-green. Like, to me, I have some black cards that could go in an artifact stack. And I also think Spymaster's Vault's best home is blue-black, because it helps with the card draw synergy. And then I think I've got some black cards that could be blue-black. I've got some black cards that could be black-red. Like, I think there's a world where I could pivot into black-red. And then I think my green cards are, I could be green Eldrazi, or I could be like green-white or whatever. I'm really not thinking I have the start to a green-black deck here, which is another reason why I think it's easier for me to take Sneaky Snacker, because of how I'm bucketing the five cards I've already taken in my brain.
Can I ask you to put into, like, so when you take Sneaky Snacker here, do you think that's now the most likely spot you end up in?
No. I mean, maybe. I think the one thing that worries me here that we haven't shouted about this pick also is there's no green cards. But that's kind of the fun thing about play boosters. Used to would have been, you see a pack with no green cards and you're like, great, I am off this territory, this territory color and Eternal Witness. Mm-hmm. But you can't quite do that now. I still think it's a pretty big data point that there's literal zero green cards, but it's possible that the pack just had weird coalition. I mean, we did get a late territory color. We saw the late Evolution Witness. So I kind of forgot the initial question here. Ask me that again.
I was just asking, like,
if I was like in an interview, just fumbling around.
It's all good.
Just keep talking and try to sound smart.
You gave good information. I was just asking, like, when you take Sneaky Snacker here, are you like, well, I'm still probably 10%. Is it 10%? My most
likely archetype?
Because I think it might be.
I don't know. I think if I were assigning percentages, I think it is. I think it's all equally spread between black red, blue black,
green X,
and green X. I think like 33% mm-hmm. to each of those probably right now. No, that's probably not true. Like there's like 10% in there. So maybe it's 30-30-30, 10% for actual straight black green.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's 25 to all of them. So but it's not heavily weighted towards Sneaky Snacker because this is the first time. Like this is.
But it's
the
also
first...
not low, like when you took Ocelot Pride of like, yeah, it's probably not going to make my deck. Like
correct. Yes, correct. Higher than that. Yeah, I think if we're talking about percentages that I expect, it's probably like, yeah, a very reasonable chance. But this is just starting to open the door. Mm-hmm. I don't see this pick six and I'm like, great, got a late signal. I'm blue black now.
I think that's my big takeaway is I just need to be a little bit more tempered because I think what I want is to either be like, this is my direction or like this direction is closed. I want to like
I want to clearly open doors and go down them, or I want to clearly close doors. And you're taking a much more measured approach with this draft.
Well, so I think this is all jokes aside, I think this is a difference in how you and I draft. I'm treading carefully here. I see Ethan's eyebrows raising. We have a very different sorting.
Please don't insult me on the morning of the Arena Open.
We have a very different sorting and drafting process. Like, you are, after every pick, you want to see your deck that you expect it to be. And when you start to pivot, you take all the cards and put them in the sideboard. And you're like, okay, this is what I'm doing now. And then you don't forget about them.
Yeah.
But the next pick, if you pivot back, you'll be like, pull all those cards out of the sideboard and put the other ones in the sideboard. You always want to be looking at the cards you expect to play. And you judge me a lot for, like, I want to see all my cards that I could play laid out in front of me. That's why I don't always have my deck built at the end of the draft. And you always like to poke fun at me about it. And I like to give it back to you because it's very, mine's just a little more free flowing, I think, than your process is.
Yeah, that's very fair. Yeah. I think, I will not, I don't need to, I'm like, every fiber of my being like wants to just like get you back.
But, attack back me.
But it's a fair point. And like, I've always, you know, thought that that process was best. And I hadn't thought about the like sort of the possibility that then it maybe closes me off. Cause you're right. I don't forget about those cards. I'm very cognizant of my possibilities. Right,
that's what I mean. It's
but
just
I want to be able to see. I feel like I get the most out of my future picks if I see exactly how stuff is going to slot in to what I see the deck being, rather than just like, we got a little soup here and let's like just figure out we don't know what seasonings we're going to need, how this soup is going to end up. And I think that's fair. That's a fair point. That's actually, you know what? You didn't insult me. You gave me some good fodder as we go into draft one of the Arena Open.
You'll love to see it. So just to kind of close this draft out, next pick, there's a Blood-Soaked Insight. That's the black-red MDFC. Took that there as maybe a hedge into black-red. Plus, at this point, I'm feeling like I'm going to be black something.
Okay.
After taking Blood-Soaked Insight, because there's also a Riddlegate Gargoyle.
I know, that's what I'm not.
That I'm choosing not to spec on. Because, again, that touches none of my colors. Like, I'm just nowhere near the energy space right now. So I don't really see that as a viable pivot option, despite the fact that it's here and there's a Phyrexian Ironworks here. Like, there's some signals for energy.
And you had, and there was a Gargoyle pick two. So that's worth throwing out there. But the thing that, like, and I feel myself already getting constricted as I, like, because I thought, I saw this pick and I was like, oh man, why not just take Gargoyles? But like, the more of those speculative, there's a diminishing returns. The more of those speculative picks you make, you give yourself less time to wiggle out of them because you don't have as many picks, right? So if you take Gargoyle here,
you almost have to just, if you want to get into it,
you've like, got like one or two picks to decide. Yes. Whereas if you just say, I'm black, you basically have the rest of this pack. And then you let the beginning of pack two sort of inform the wheel slash the beginning of pack two inform your direction. And that's so much more breathing room.
Yes, that's how I feel about it. That's why I took the insight here and didn't spec on the Gargoyle, because I already specced on the Snacker.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely diminishing returns. Pick eight, though, I do spec on a Cranial Ram. There's a Cranial Ram here in black as well as a Victimize. But I think it's very real that once we've decided we're black, now we could be black-red. If you've got the familiar, that turns familiar into a good card. So basically at this point, I've scrapped. Once I take Cranial Ram here, pack one, pick eight, I'm scrapping the green cards. No longer, I think I'm 0% to play color or Evo Witness. I'm 100% to play black. And I'm trying to figure out whether I'm black-red or black-blue or black something else.
Okay, I jumped ahead. I'm looking at this deck. So you end up in mostly mono red, but you've got a handful of black cards. Two cards I need to ask you a question about.
Okay.
One, there's a Ruby Medallion, which is an artifact for your black red deck and your mono red deck. Was this good?
It was not bad. Okay. There was like a couple times I remember drawing it late and it was embarrassing, but the times I played it on turn two, it was nuts.
That's pretty sick. And then Wheel of Potential. That's a spice.
It was explosive, baby. This deck was explosive. I had double Unstable Amulet, Wheel of Potential. There was a lot of times I vomited my hand and then wheeled for like, if my opponent had three cards in hand, I'd wheel for four or whatever, you know? And like, maybe they get one extra card, but I get four. Like,
yeah.
It was a cool deck.
That is sweet. That's really sweet. Yeah, this has been a great conversation for me, and so I can only imagine that I hope it's been fruitful for our listeners as well.
All right, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, Salty Pretzels, for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com. Links to our episode backlog, our YouTube channel. You can find my Arena Open, hopefully runs, like draft one and draft two up there later this week. You find our streams on Twitch. Ben is streaming up a storm, courtesy of summer, hashtag summer break. We've got our merch, courtesy of TeePublic, our Patreon page, reward tiers, all that stuff, over at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.